Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Seems like every week, or even more frequently than that, we're talking about a mass shooting in the United States of America. And I think a lot of us are looking for ways. What is it that we can do? What can happen, or what should be done to stop these mass shooters? There's a really interesting initiative called the Violence Project that's been co-founded by two people here in Minnesota that addresses this. Joining us now on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline is Dr. James Densley with the Violence Project. Thank you so much, Dr. Densley, for joining us. First of all, when I go to your website, theviolenceproject.org, it is filled with data. Can you share some of the key findings that you've seen about mass shooters?
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show. You're right. We've studied mass shootings going all the way back to 1966, and we've built a database of mass shooters, and we've also interviewed mass shooters as part of a book called The Violence Project. And we see a common through line in the lives of mass shooters. There's often early childhood trauma. These mass shooters really do reach an identifiable crisis point in their lives. And it's usually a crisis where they no longer care if they live or die, because a mass shooting is intended to be a final act. And it's their way of expressing their grievance with the world on a wide audience. Mass shooters also study other mass shooters. They are inspired by them. They relate to them and see themselves in them. And then, of course, you can't have a mass shooting if you don't have access to firearms. And so often what we see is in that pathway to violence, it's around that time when they purchase the gun that they then use in the crime that follows.
So when you look at the more recent cases, what happened in Highland Park, Illinois, in Uvalde, what would you, just from what we know so far about these shooters, what should have been done to prevent it?
Yeah, we try and layer our solutions on sort of three levels. So we say, what are things we can do as individuals right here, right now to prevent a mass shooting? And in this particular case, it seems to be around access to firearms. So safe storage of weapons would be one thing that's important here. In the case of the 4th of July parade shooter, for instance, they got their weapon sponsored by their parent. And this was just after that they'd already threatened both suicide and homicide. And then the dad sponsored the application for the weapon. So that would be an example of where we need to be thinking a little bit more strategically about things. Now, at the institutional level, we need to be looking out for one another. So in our schools, in our workplaces, we need to be attuned to the warning signs of violence. And if you see something, say something. Be willing to speak out and get people connected to the help they need. And then, of course, there's the more sort of thorny issue around the stuff we need to do as a society at the top level. And that would include, you know, how do we restrict access to firearms for people that shouldn't have them? Red flag laws in these particular cases could have been effective. So could have wait periods and some other measures which would have put a barrier between that person getting access to a firearm and then the crime that followed.
There will be people who disagree with that. They say that it's not about access to guns, that it's mental health issues. But through your research, it looks like you found that more restrictions on guns, buying guns, would help.
That's correct. And we've taken quite a deeper dive into mental illness, actually, because that is often one of the things that comes up in these cases. Nobody who perpetrates a mass shooting is mentally well. They are truly struggling in life, and that's what's got them to that point. But if you look at something like psychosis, delusions and hallucinations, and whether or not those traits are actually motivating a shooting, we see that that's really only the case about 10% of the time, which means that 90% of the time there's something else going on in the lives of those shooters. And all because you have a mental illness, It doesn't mean that everything you do is related to that mental illness, is driven by that mental illness. And the research is really clear that actually people with mental illness are more likely to be victims of violence than they are perpetrators. So it's a complex picture, and we have to sort of embrace the complexity of this if we're going to get toward a solution. But the too ready access to firearms is definitely a proximate risk factor for this type of a crime.
We're talking to Dr. James Densley with the Violence Project. And just finally, is there anything we as individuals, you know, besides being on the lookout for these types of people and seeing and reporting things, anything else we should be doing as individuals to stop this?
Well, as you mentioned, it is that looking out for one another. And I think, you know, mentoring the young men in our lives, it's disproportionately men that perpetrate these crimes, men and boys. And so it's really looking out for those people who are struggling. And if you are a parent, you know, safe storage of firearms in the home is really important. You know, so many of these more recent shootings are young men. We're talking people, you know, 21 and younger, and they're often getting access to firearms through family members. And so if you've got somebody you're worried about, it's really about looking out for them, but also ensuring that they can't do harm to themselves and to others.
Some great perspective on this. Your website is theviolenceproject.org. You've written a book on this. If people want more information, they should go to your website, theviolenceproject.org. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time: baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.